the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, and we're here today for the public hearing on Senate Bill 5518, which is the budget bill for the Department of Fish and Wildlife. We will be in public hearing for 3 days of this week, and the first thing that we're going to be looking at is the agency orientation and background, and I will turn the process over to Mr. Rocco from Legislative Fiscal to take us through the material he has compiled.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I've passed out to you today a packet of materials that you've probably grown accustomed to seeing from other agencies. There's a cover memo with some attachments, including some slides describing the department's governor's recommended budget, the funding, expenditures by program, and a historical chart. There's the LFO analysis of the governor's recommended budget, which is attached. There is a memo that has all of the budget notes that were included in the agency's 1999 budget, and you can see there's several pages of those, about 5 pages, and I think the agency will be responding to how they complied with those budget notes during their presentation. There are 2 audit reports attached. One was done by the Secretary of State Audits Division on commercial fisheries regulation. This was done in March of released in March of 2000, and that's there for your review. There's a joint legislative audit committee review that was done and was released in December of 2000. This is primarily directed at the fish endowment account and the agency's use of that fund, and I think you'll hear more about this later in relation to another bill that's will come before this committee, Senate Bill 62. There were no real fee adjustments. However, House Bill 2100, which was passed by the 1999 legislature, made several changes to angling and hunting license and tag fees for calendar years 2000 and 2001. This session, there's another bill, House Bill 2166, which would remove the sunset. House Bill 2100 from last session had a 2-year sunset on the fee changes. And I think it's important to note that there were changes to fees. Not all of the fees were increased. In some cases, fees actually decreased in House Bill 2100. So House Bill 2166 is currently in Ways and Means and will also be coming to this committee, I would suspect, later when we get into work session on this budget. There's also attached a summary of, or the minutes from all the emergency board actions that occurred during the 99-01 interim, starting with an action in October of 99, and you can see a summary of those in the cover memo, and then the minutes of each of those are attached at the back of the packet. You also have in front of you a document from the agency, which is their presentation document, which they will start going through, which looks like that. And you have the governor's recommended budget binder book, which is the larger of the materials in front of you.
Questions or comments for Mr. Rocco? Thank you. At this point, I will ask Lindsay Ball, the director of the department, to come forward, and any people that you would like to bring with you, and we will begin the agency overview. Thank you.
I need one of those back here.
Good afternoon and welcome.
Chair Morgan, members of the committee, my name is Lindsay Ball. I'm the director of the Department of Fish and Wildlife. Before we get into a formal presentation that covers the budget today, Chair, I would like to take the liberty to deliver a letter of apology to you and the committee regarding my March 19, 2001 presentation. If I may, I would like to read that letter now. On March 19, 2001, I came before this committee and asked for permission to submit a grant to receive funds from the federal sport fish and wildlife restoration accounts to be applied toward the Oregon Wildlife Magazine. During my presentation, it was obvious the members of this committee placed confidence in my ability to bring a request before them that was accurate and credible. It is my opinion that this committee approved the department's request largely due to my personal credibility with this legislative body and the trust you have placed in me personally. I learned shortly after the presentation and referral of this department's request to full Ways and Means that Janice Green, a lobbyist representing sport fishing interests, objected to the grant request because she alleged it would take funding away from existing sport restoration programs. I was of the understanding that the grant funds in the department's proposal were new funds and would not impact existing programs when I came to you with my request. I received two phone calls later that evening and was informed that Janice Green was truly upset over this issue. The next morning, Roy Elliker and I contacted Janice Green in the Capitol and found her very concerned over what she claimed to be a raid on existing sport fish restoration funds. Since I had another meeting to attend, I asked Roy Elliker to check into this matter. I contacted Roy Elliker a short time later, and he advised me that Janice Green was correct in her assessment. I informed Ken Rocco, legislative fiscal analyst, and chair representative Susan Morgan of my discovery and asked that the grant request before full Ways and Means be canceled. Both agreed, and the presentation was canceled. I want to inform this committee that I requested the Attorney General's office to conduct a personnel review of this incident, and my request was granted. As director of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and as the individual testified before you on March 19, 2001, I take full responsibility for the inaccurate testimony I provided you. I am fully aware that one's personal and professional credibility is crucial to our legislative process. Without confidence in me, your trust in the performance of this agency is naturally challenged. I extend my apologies to the Legislative Fiscal Office and the Budget and Management of the Department of Administrative Services for all the time and work expended to bring this inappropriately placed request before this committee. And finally, my apologies to you as a committee. I extend my appreciation to Janice Green, a private citizen who brought this issue to my attention. My best regards to this committee and our Ways and Means process.
Mr. Ball, I think this is a day that I certainly am going to remember for a long time. And what I'm talking about is the day that we did the presentation in the committee asking for the grant request for the magazine, and then subsequently finding out that the information that we acted on was not true information. And what I'll carry with me for a long time is the feeling of distrust and loss of confidence in the agency that I felt. I felt like I'd been used and was angry that I'd stepped out and asked the committee to support the grant request and operated under the assumption that it was new money coming in. And I appreciate very much how you came forward to us in a very fast time frame and told us what you'd found out. And, you know, we sat down and talked about how to deal with it and arrived at the conclusion that simply not taking the request to full Ways and Means was the best way to deal with it. And I think that this is just another one of those things on that pile that is already quite big of times when this side of the table has been misled and essentially used by the management of the agency and is a situation that if the attitude that's behind this continues, there isn't any basis for any trust between the legislative side of the equation and the management side of the agency, and the relationship just simply can't continue on that basis. There has to be a reason to trust what the agency does and the information that the agency gives us, or we can't go forward and work in a meaningful way to do what's right by the people that are served by this agency. So I commend your courage, and I commend you drawing the line in the sand on this one. And I, too, want to apologize to the members of the committee for recommending that we approve this request. It was not the correct thing to do. And I would hope that this will serve as a real turning point in the relationship between the legislature and the management of the agency. Well, Senator.
Madam Chairman, before the response by the acting director, I would like to share that I too will remember today as being the first time in a long time that I have felt confidence in the agency. And it has to do with the chairman's actions, holding the agency accountable. It has to do with the acting director's actions in coming here today with the statement that he's read into the record. What this agency has needed for the length of time that I've served in the legislature has been a director who takes responsibility, personal responsibility for the actions of the agency, and acknowledges errors, discloses facts, and then acts in the best interests of taxpayers and citizens and fish and wildlife. And so I look at today's information perhaps in a little different light. I think the chairman is exactly right to feel as she does. Absolutely. And I think the acting director is exactly right to make the apology to the committee and personally to the chair, as he's done. But I also believe that that establishes a completely different mode of operating for the agency. That if this if the message goes forth to employees of the agency that the director will take responsibility for their actions, then he has every right to expect them to fully disclose to him the salient information that he needs to represent the agency efficiently and effectively to the legislature. And that I think that's been what's missing, is a sense of accountability that extends from the newest hire in the agency right through the director. And so I guess today, for me, is a day of departure, as you pointed out, Madam Chairman. I commend also the actions of the acting director, and I will say that there may be future challenges ahead where that credibility will be critical. Rather than a loss of credibility because of these actions, I think the executive director helps increase the agency's credibility, and I think that is exactly why the director was appointed, to establish that responsibility and hopefully lend some of his credibility to the agency, leading by example. I'm pretty impressed.
Thank you. Further comments, Representative Krieger?
Maybe just real briefly. I spoke the other day on 3637 regarding accountability to this body and the governor. I had great confidence when I heard that Mr. Ball was going to take this job, because the agency that he came from, the one that I worked for, your word, the manner that you presented yourself to the public, could not falter from that as far as being upright and truthful, or you were down the road. He's continued that with this agency, and I think it'll only help the agency develop. I look forward to the next few years.
Senator Krupp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to add my appreciation to Captain Ball for coming forward with this letter at this time. It is not, at least in my short term in this building, it is not normal to have an agency head issue such a letter. However, I find it refreshing, and I appreciate the frankness and the opportunity to be open. I might ask the chair if I could ask a question of the director. How'd this happen?
Chair Morgan, Representative Krupp, there's a lot of this that is a part of a personnel review, and I certainly have to keep that in confidence. How it happened, I think at this time that we've yet to conclude the personnel review. And so I really feel it would probably be best if I not comment about that. I have formed some opinions and about the whole matter, and there have been some facts laid out. But really, at this point, I need to refrain from making a comment.
Thank you.
Sure, thank you.
Well, Chair Morgan, thank you for this opportunity. As you well know, I have great respect for this legislative process. I certainly wasn't going to let this go unanswered. Well, Chair Morgan and members of the committee, again, my name is Lindsey Ball. I'm the Director of the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and I come before you today to give a brief overview of the Department's statutory responsibility and program functions. My staff will give a more detailed description of specific program and service delivery to the public in the near future, today and the following days, the upcoming days. For the purpose of this presentation, we will not be advising you of specific budget information pursuant to 0103 beyond base budget. There are issues relevant to the ODFW budget which are yet to be resolved by the executive and legislative branches of government. We will come before you again in the near future to propose specific limitations to the ODFW budget expenditure when those issues are worked through at the upper policy level. I would like to review a few of the statutes that very briefly that created the agency. 496087 created the State Fish and Wildlife Commission to be known as the State Department of Fish and Wildlife. RS 496.124 specifically mandates that there be a fish division and a wildlife division. The other divisions of the agency exist at the discretion of the director, and it's obvious that legislature felt that fish and wildlife management was very important to Oregon. 496.012 is legislative law creating the policy of the state of Oregon that wildlife shall be managed to prevent serious depletion of any indigenous species and to provide the optimal recreational and aesthetic benefits for present and future generations. 496.162 requires the department to establish seasons and amounts and manner of taking wildlife. RS 405.06.109 establishes the food fish policy to manage food fish for optimal economic, commercial, and recreational benefits for present and future generations. There are other statutes as well that govern ODFW, but the ones I have covered I feel create the foundation of our mission statement found on page 2 of your handout. Our mission is to protect and enhance Oregon's fish and wildlife and their habitats for use and enjoyment by present and future generations. The strategic plan developed by the department over the last couple of years is titled Vision 2006. And in conjunction with the mission statement, there are 7 goals that were identified in the strategic plan. Under resource management, goal 1 is healthy and sustainable fish and wildlife and their habitats. Goal 2 is enhanced use and enjoyment of native and non-native fish and wildlife resources consistent with restoring and maintaining healthy native fish and wildlife populations. Public awareness and support. An informed and supportive public that has ownership in sound fish and wildlife resource management. Goal 4. An increased diversity of participants in fish and wildlife issues that reflect Oregon's human demographics. Goal 5 is to maintain and develop effective and supportive partnerships that enable the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife and its partners to reach mutual goals in resource management. Under workforce, Goal 6 is a workforce known for its excellence in public and customer service by increasing diversity, competency, and expertise. With respect to business services and support, Goal 7 is effective support and planning systems that enable the department to manage fish and wildlife resources. On page 5, there is an organizational chart that identifies the structure of the agency. Of course, the governor of the state appoints the 7 members of the commission. I work directly for the commission. There are 2 deputies assigned to the director's office, and the programs are broken out into administration programs and natural resource programs. The administration program consists of Human Resources Division, Administrative Services Division, Information and Education Division, and Information Systems Division. Under natural resources, under the guidance of Deputy Director Ron Anglin, there are field operations making up the 4 regions: the Northwest Region, High Desert Region, Northeast Region, Southwest Region, and then the 3 divisions in headquarters: the Fish Division, Wildlife Division, and Habitat Division. As mentioned earlier, the Wildlife Policy, ORS 496-012, and the Food Fish Policy, 506-109, govern Oregon's fish and wildlife resources. Under these statutes, the department has created 4 major budget programs within the department. They are the Wildlife Division, Fish Division, Habitat Division, and Administrative Services Division. A 5th major budget program, Fish and Wildlife Law Enforcement, is located within the Oregon State Police under the Fish and Wildlife Division of that agency. The department manages these programs under the concept of watershed management, which we integrate fish, wildlife, and habitat management. This is a community-based approach where citizens, outdoor recreation groups, watershed councils, local, state, and federal partners coordinate resource management activities. There are 10 watershed districts in the state, supported by 4 regions and our Portland headquarters. And on page 8, you'll note there is a map identifying those 10 watershed districts. Performance measures are designed to evaluate service delivery to the public through recreational opportunities, commercial harvest opportunities, assistance to landowners, research that will enhance our fish and wildlife resources, assistance rendered to private and public land managers, outreach to the public and media, and compliance measurements by our fish and wildlife law enforcement. I'd like to share some direction that I want to see the agency pursue in the future. I want to see continued and improved communication with our legislature. I want to see the agency facilitate communication with the public. And by facilitation, I mean go out and engage our public with discussions about fish and wildlife management. I want to see the agency implement a natural fish and a hatchery fish conservation program that's commensurate with the ESA and, most importantly, the Oregon Plan. I think the Oregon Plan is a model that we can look to as a means to manage our natural resources into the future. I feel that the voluntary compliance nature of the Oregon Plan is what makes it so successful. We also need to revisit how big game is managed that live on private and public lands. You hear a lot of complaints from landowners about damage a lot of compensation issues raised by landowners for loss due to wildlife. If you look, in 1993, the last time we had a serious discussion regarding compensation to landowners through the Access and Habitat Board that was created then, I think it's probably time after 8 years, during this next interim, to look into working with landowners again, seeing if there's some other kind of tool that we might be able to employ, relieve some of the pressure from the landowner. And lastly, I want to see the agency restore its fiscal integrity. And I know that many of you are aware of the situation that we're in today. I think it's paramount that in the next interim that the agency make good on its fiscal integrity. That concludes my testimony today. I'll be happy to answer any questions that you may have before I introduce our next presenter.
Questions or comments for Director Ball? Please proceed.
The next presenter, and I'll introduce him now, is our Wildlife Division Director, Mr. George Buckner.
Good afternoon, Mr. Buckner. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Morgan, members of the committee. My name is George Buckner. I'm the Wildlife Division Director, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. And I'm here today to give you an overview of our Wildlife Division programs. And I'll be speaking from starting on page 34 of that Ways and Means document. The mission of the Wildlife Division is to manage all species at optimum levels while providing recreational and aesthetic benefits, while regulating wildlife populations in a manner that is compatible with the primary uses of the lands of our state. Our division has a customer base of over 325,000 hunters who spend an estimated $625 million annually pursuing their sport. An even greater number of Oregonians spends over $400 million annually viewing wildlife. Wildlife Division has 158 FTEs distributed throughout the state, and staff are involved in a variety of issues that include providing wildlife-related recreational opportunities to Oregonians, responding to wildlife damage complaints, as Director Ball has already mentioned, responding to requests from landowners for assistance in developing wildlife habitat projects, coordinating with federal, state, local, and tribal partners on wildlife management programs and ESA issues, and gathering scientific information on Oregon's wildlife resources. 87% of the Wildlife Division's FTEs are located in the field. The division is divided into three primary program areas: game, habitat, and wildlife diversity. Program priorities are established through the department's strategic, and business plans. Our first program area is the game program, and primary responsibilities include monitoring the status of game populations and recommending seasons and harvest quotas, allocating funds from the sale of waterfowl and upland bird stamps to wildlife development projects, producing hunting regulations and informational materials, and responding to public inquiries. To monitor populations, wildlife staff, field staff, gather biological information and forward that to Portland headquarters. Headquarters staff works with field staff, OSP, and control hunt staff to compile statewide seasons, quotas, and bag limits. Portland staff file rulemaking paperwork and prepare commission presentations. The result is over 500 individual controlled hunts for seven big game species such as deer and elk, plus unlimited general season tags for some deer, bull elk, cougars, and bears. We receive over 400,000 applications for 200 controlled hunt tags. Our program staff works with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in developing recommendations for duck seasons in three zones and goose seasons in five zones in the state. Statewide seasons are established for 10 upland game birds such as ruffed grouse, California quail, and sage grouse. Game program staff coordinate the contracting and publication of big game and game bird regulations and coordinate with our Information and Education Division to produce publications such as this guide to game bird hunting, our big game statistics, game bird statistics, and numerous other brochures. Our program staff recently coordinated with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Defenders of Wildlife, and Wildlife Services in developing a Living with Carnivores workshop that has been presented in 6 locations throughout the state. Game program staff administer revenue from the sale of waterfowl stamps to fund projects that improve wetland habitat and provide public hunting access. An example of access development is use of those stamp funds to operate the Northwest Permit Goose Zone that's designed to help reduce crop depredation here in the Willamette Valley. Wildlife Habitat Project funds are matched with partners such as Ducks Unlimited, and for every Oregon duck stamp dollar, we secure 2 additional dollars to be put on the ground to fund these projects. In spending program dollars, our field staff submit projects to our wetland coordinator, and they work as a group to establish statewide priorities for funding. The Upland Bird Stamp Fund funds projects to improve habitat for such species as California quail and sage grouse. Just as with the waterfowl stamp funds, our field staff develop projects. They submit those to our upland bird coordinator, and they work as a group to establish statewide priorities. These stamp funds are also used in the Upland Cooperative Access Program, or UCAP program, that some of you may be familiar with. This is a program that provides about 100,000 acres of private land for public hunting in the Columbia Basin, and it provides up to 50 cents an acre to landowners who are enrolled in the program. Our second program area is the Habitat Program. The program priorities include providing direction and funding for 13 department-owned areas, coordinating the Green Forage Program, providing direction and funding for wildlife research, funding a statewide wildlife damage program, coordinating the Access and Habitat Program, and providing wildlife habitat restoration on private land. These program staff actively manage 13 of 20 wildlife areas throughout the state for wildlife habitat, hunting, and wildlife viewing. Most of our management areas serve a special purpose, such as providing critical winter habitat for waterfowl or big game. These areas provide over 175,000 public use days annually and host special youth waterfowl and upland bird hunting for about 1,500 youth annually. Habitat program staff coordinate the Green Forage Program, which assists about 400 landowners annually, and they receive technical advice and funding for seed, fertilizer, vegetation control, and water developments for wildlife habitat projects. Our research activities are also included in this program area. Currently, our staff is conducting research on cougar and bear populations, and recently finalized plans for a long-term research program to study elk nutrition and predation in Northeast Oregon. We're cooperating with Oregon State University, the Bureau of Land Management, Fish and Wildlife Service on sage-grouse research, and we have active research projects with Oregon State on forest grouse and mountain quail. Federal funds through this program are also used by field staff in coordination with our Habitat Division to assist landowners with wildlife habitat projects. And about $2 million is spent biannually providing technical advice and project funding. Now, nested within this program and our game program is our statewide wildlife damage program that consumes a major portion of staff time, field staff time especially. This past biennium, we expended over $4 million assisting landowners with technical advice and materials to reduce or prevent wildlife damage. We coordinate with the Oregon Department of Agriculture and USDA Wildlife Services to maximize our efficiency and to leverage our funding. The Access and Habitat Program was initiated in 1993 with revenue from a $2 surcharge on hunting licenses, and it was to fund projects on private land that would improve habitat and provide access. Last biennium, 56 projects totaling $1.2 million were approved. The board strives for a 50% cost share, and this past biennium, cooperators contributed 78% in matching funds, which means that for every A&H dollar, there are $3 in cooperator funds that go towards these projects. In the past, there's been some issue with the balance between access and habitat on these A&H projects, and last biennium, 79% of all the A&H projects included access as a part of the project agreement. The third program area in our division is wildlife diversity, and it focuses on the management of species for which we have authority but which are not classified as game or fur bearers. 88% of Oregon's fish and wildlife species are non-game. Primary program priorities include restoring populations of federal and state listed species to healthy status, preventing species from becoming threatened or endangered by recommending actions that would improve their population numbers, implementing programs to protect native wildlife, and providing educational and scientific information about Oregon's non-game species. To accomplish these goals, staff developed programs and helped secure funding for the recovery of 26 wildlife species that are listed as state or federally endangered. These include species such as the coastal snowy plover, where we're working with the Bureau of Land Management, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and Oregon State Parks to protect breeding populations. A major goal of all recovery and protection programs is to prevent species from becoming federally listed. Our partnership with a number of state and federal agencies has resulted in the American peregrine falcon and the bald eagle nearing recovery goals for delisting. In 1996, our agency adopted the Wildlife Integrity Rules, which are designed to protect native wildlife by controlling non-native species. To date, a panel of experts that include representatives from the exotic animal industry have classified over 16,000 non-native species based on their potential to harm native wildlife. In conclusion, the Wildlife Division has three program areas: their game, habitat, and wildlife diversity, and all three of those program areas provide direct or indirect benefits for all Oregonians. And Chair Morgan, that concludes my testimony, and I'll be happy to try to answer any questions.
Questions or comments? Representative Hayden.
The direct or indirect benefits. I've often puzzled about this when there's an economic benefit to extracting natural resources. If you extract coal or oil or corn or cattle, somehow the value of the raw resource is multiplied and the end product creates wealth. I've never been able to understand how, if this creates wealth or is this just cultural and recreational and aesthetic. I understand that the fishing industry would create some $50 million worth of wealth, but are any of the direct or indirect benefits that you mentioned economic, other than money is transferred from A to B, but does it grow in value?
Chair Morgan, Representative Hayden, wildlife in North America are supposedly owned by the citizens of the state rather than by landowners, as they are in Europe. And I assume that's where you're headed with this questioning.
No, this is really sort of a basic economic thing. I really don't understand if, when you said there are direct and indirect benefits, if any of those were creation of economic value.
Chair Morgan, Representative Hayden, excuse me, Director Ball.
Chair Morgan, Representative Hayden, I think in response to your question, Director Buckner was referring to was that there is an economic base that surrounds fish and wildlife utilization. In other words, if someone goes fishing, oftentimes they spend money in pursuit of that recreational opportunity. That has an effect on the economy directly and indirectly, because there are supplies that are purchased, there are motels that are used, there are bait shops that are visited, etc.